All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Glad you're with us. Another excellent week of college football is in the books. We are moving into week four of the college football season. Before we move on, South Alabama 31, UCLA 32. Kane Womack takes the Jags out to the Rose Bowl in front of a solid 4,500 people.
100 people?
2,500 people.
Okay.
3,000 people.
Maybe.
But Damian Webb goes for 16 carries, 124 yards. And they outrush UCLA 162 to 144. They have more first downs than UCLA did. And they're up to 4th-and-2 on the 22 going in. And they line up for a 39-yard field goal. Tanner McGlow, the backup holder, goes, tries to find somebody in a fake, and he can't. He takes a sack, which, again, is if you're going to run that, you have to get the ball
out. Get something out of it.
Give them extra yards on the pursuing drive. And then Nicholas Barr kicks a 24-yard game-winning field goal for UCLA on the last play of regulation. Just, I'm not going to be mad at a coach being aggressive as a massive underdog on the road. But man, you had that game. They had it. God. I just hate that for Kane and his group. They are 2-1, had a chance to be 3-0 with a win over UCLA. They're playing great football this year. And just a brutal loss for South Alabama. If you are at some sort of a loss because of an injury, Andrew Sports Medicine is here to help. They're dedicated to helping our community stay healthy while aggressively pursuing victory over injury with 7 Alabama locations. Call Andrew Sports Medicine 24/7 at 205-939-3699 or visit andrewsportsmedicine.com. Landers has been on hold for a while. I want to try to bring him in on the Bud Light Hotline. Landers, welcome in. I apologize for the wait.
Hey, no problem at all, guys. I got a job to do just like everybody else. I just had a couple questions for you guys. One was about Alabama, and I'm kind of a huge Jahmyr Gibbs fan right now, and I feel like they are utilizing like his strengths as far as like a receiving back, but I'm still curious as to why he's not getting as many carries. Is it just like he's new, or we've got, you know, too many backs on the depth chart? And then my second question, and I'll leave it with you guys, is how good is Kentucky this year?
All right, we'll start with Alabama, and I think that you have different backs that offer different strengths. And I do believe that Jace McClellan is probably a little bit better between the tackles. Now, I mean, Jahmyr can do it. He's fine there. I don't think that's a situation where, and I'll be really interested to talk to Coach O'Brien this week as my crew is going to be on Vanderbilt at Alabama, 6:30 p.m. on the SEC Network, and just kind of get his thoughts on the running back situation, where they are in the run game. Like I said, I felt like they were a little bit more committed to running the zone play against ULM. And there were some ULM runs that three-man front. It's a little bit difficult to deal with. It's hard to get some of your double teams on it. It can be complicated, but they at least kind of stuck with it to try and open up some play action. That's been an emphasis from Coach Saban the entire offseason. But then you've got Roy Dell and Jace McClellan that are probably a little better suited physically for that. What I would like to see is more two back, personally. And then if you want to use Gibbs out of the backfield, you could. Kind of similar to how Georgia used Cook last year. I think you could do a lot of those different things with him. But you're Jahmyr Gibbs fan for good reason. I mean, the guy's been excellent so far. And when he does get in the open field, he obviously can make guys miss and he can find ways to make plays. As far as Kentucky, I have my concerns. But I'll tell you, what is real are the receivers. And that's what a lot of folks were concerned about with Kentucky heading into the season. Did they have the wideouts to even be dynamic at all? Now, I'll say this. You go to Twitter, look at the throw that I posted from Will Levis. The guy is literally moving backwards on one foot, and he sidearms a ball about 20 yards downfield on a rope. And you just think, holy mother, there's the talent. And then you see the touchdown that he threw in his own end zone. And you'd think, holy mother, what's he thinking? So there's still a little give and take with Will Levis, but I think the give is really good. I mean, he threw for 377 still, 2 touchdowns. But Dane Key, number one, I don't think we saw this coming.
No.
He can be dynamic.
He got that dog.
And there is no part of Tavion Robinson that is a possession receiver.
Oh.
He's not Wandell just yet, or quite. But he's pretty close.
Yeah, like,
he can be super dynamic, and you can use him a lot of different ways. So I think where I am with Kentucky is the run game, and I don't think Chris Rodriguez makes that big of a difference. Like, Kvasie's fine. And I think Lavelle Wright's done some good things. D. Beckwith is more of a hammer. But, you know, Rodriguez does have a better feel for the zone scheme. He's multi-time 1,000-yard rusher. He'll help, but they've got some issues at tackle right now. And they're missing some things in the run game that are very concerning. The defense is really good. That is an elite group of linebackers. And you have a freshman D tackle that's playing out of his mind right now. So there are some – I understand where maybe the reserve is on Kentucky to say, oh, they're just great, or oh, they're really good. But there are parts of that team that we did not anticipate being parts that would help them win games that are already helping them win games. Like, I don't really think they went to Florida and just outplayed Florida. I think they had a couple guys that made some plays when they had to make them. They found a way to win. Good. But – they'll get another non-con this week, and then Kentucky Ole Miss is going to be off the rails. I think they're both going to be undefeated.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one.
That's going to be really
good. That's going to be a good one.
That's going to be a really good game in 2 weeks. Michael is on a cell, wants to talk Auburn. Welcome into the show, Michael.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you guys. Two quick questions. One, Auburn really struggled in the red zone. I'm curious your thoughts on maybe some things they could do differently, maybe like the Wildcat with Tank that you mentioned earlier in the show. And then secondarily, with the, you know, it is what it is, with the personnel they have, can they be coached up? So, one, like, is there a way to scheme around your deficiencies? And then two, do you believe this coaching staff is talented enough to do that? And I'll hang up and listen. I appreciate you guys so much. Y'all have a great rest of your day.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Part of me, I'm going to say, I don't know, because I haven't been around Keyshaw and Schmetting and like studied where they were previously to see if that's going to happen. I think a lot of it's still new for a lot of those guys. So I don't know. But can Silva be adjusted to help? I think absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think Shanker can be involved more. I think Tank can be fed more. I mean, the way that I envision this season would be, I mean, go watch Baylor and how they operate. I hate to say BYU after what just happened at Oregon, but offensively, the way that they work, the way that they operate, go watch App State in that offense, who had a dynamic win against Troy over the weekend. And you'll see the entire offense relies on that stretch play, and then everything's built around it. So it's okay to, this is the feeling that I get when I watch it. Stretch play, start doing new stuff. Stretch play, let's do some new stuff. Let's do some new stuff, stretch play. Where, in my opinion, it should be stretch, 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 boot, stretch, stretch, screen, stretch, stretch, shot play. I mean, that's kind of, and then you start to work in some counter, and then you work in some inside zone, and then if they're going to fly in upfield, you work in a wham play every now and then. Like, it's all sync, rhythm, harmony, feel, chemistry.
And I'm going to ask this.
It can't just be calling plays.
And that's why I ask about the two quarterback thing, where to me, I feel as though I'm not going to say there's no structure or there's no method to the madness, but it's very difficult for me to see a quarterback go out there and make, you know, a play here, play there. Then it's like second and six, and all of a sudden, boom, nine goes in there, makes a play, comes out, then boom, one's back in there. The next play goes in, makes a play. And it's just like there's no –
it's tough.
It's tough to find any rhythm when from the get-go there's nobody that's consistent, if that makes sense.
Well, and that's why – that's, I think, where – let's be real. Where the two quarterback systems have worked best, it has been situational.
Mm-hmm.
Where, okay, let's bring in our battering ram quarterback on third and two.
Yeah.
Who can run a lot of the offense, but also is better suited to put his head down, shoulder square, and run forward for 2 or 3 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Or when we get into a situation where it's 2-minute whatnot, let's bring in a quarterback who throws a little bit better. He's going to manage this part of our offense. You get in the reds. I mean, listen, it's not like two quarterback systems just started. I remember when Damian Craig would come in the red zone. That was his job. He was the red zone quarterback. And you'd run sprint out, and he'd run bootlegs, and they had designed stuff for him to utilize his legs. I agree with you, Damian, that you can't just have a guy come in and run his play or a similar play just to show that you're going to use him, then he goes out. And
right.
that's kind of the way it feels a lot of times Once again, it can still be complementary. It's just that his skill set suits what you want to accomplish with that play better than the other guy. And it's hard to notice that sometimes. And to be fair, I will say, I don't think the way that game was dictating things for Auburn that you really had time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, bringing him in on the second play, there's a lot of people that didn't like that. I was fine with it. Go ahead and show you're going to use him. Like, because a lot of times you got a guy sitting on the sideline who's just getting nervous. Like, he said, I'm going to play. 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 And then 10 plays go by, and all of a sudden his confidence is altered, and he's sulking.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I was going to play.
Yeah.
So, all right, get him in. Let's see what he can do. See if he's ready. And then we kind of build it from there. It will be – some of the things that are happening can be coached around.
Right.
I have confidence in Coach Harsin, but – the staff's got to be on board with it and got to come along with it. And then, let's just be real, kids have got to execute a little bit better. Robin Hoover has been very patient. Welcome into the show, Rob. You're on the Bud Light Hotline.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Sorry for the wait.
Well, I really wanted to be optimistic about Harsin. I really did. I thought an outsider coming in that didn't have to cave to the various interests would be a good thing for Auburn. And after seeing the best performance of football I saw on Saturday – was a 7-year-old Dolphins running down a flagpole at the goal line the last play of the game for a thrilling victory. When I look at Auburn, I actually didn't see the game. I heard the score, and that's pretty much all I needed to know. But I guess, Cole, from a player's perspective, and I know scheme's important. Everybody's talking about coaching. That's important. You got to have all that. But they have big, strong, fast guys. We have big, strong, fast guys. I mean, at some point, don't you just tune out some of that noise and just focus on whipping the guy across the line from you? You've got to have some kind of self-motivation at some point, too, to not get embarrassed and just want to win your one-on-one battles, right? Is it? I know that's kind of simplistic, Cole, but how does that
It's not,
strike?
Though. I mean, it's not, Rob. That's what it is.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you guys have heard me say it 1,000 times, O-line, D-line, how do you get better? Full speed against the guy across from you that's trying to – I mean, had a conversation with Darnell Stapleton, won Super Bowls. He's coaching Florida's offensive line, and told him that was kind of my theory. And he goes, "Man, that's the best way I've heard it stated. Like, you have to do it." And so then at that point, when it comes down to it, it is, I mean, go back and watch the film. And you, I mean, not you, anyone, Rob, tell me how many times you saw an Auburn player manhandle the guy across from him on either side of the
ball.
Yep.
Well, I haven't seen that in 3 years. I mean, it's been a long time, and so it's frustrating. It really is. And hey, Cole, was this Deion Sanders stuff real?
I'm not. I mean, it's an easy time for a lot of people to throw a lot of stuff around. That's
right.
All I'm going to say.
See if it sticks.
More serious question though. Maybe we need a more. We thought we had an offensive coach, but what would what would Dan Mullen sound like if we needed somebody to come in that was available, that's got SEC experience, that's got an offensive background? What are your thoughts on that?
I appreciate the call, Rob. Thank you very much. 800-239-9569 if you want to get in on the Bud Light Hotline. Based on a conversation not a long time ago, I think there are two, maybe three head coaching jobs on planet Earth that Dan Mullen would take. And I think two of those, or one of those, are NFL jobs, which most people could probably figure out which ones.
Makes sense.
And I'll say this, location is key for Dan Mullen.
Location, location, location.
Key. I don't know if that one would work. The main reason I'm even going into this is I don't think Dan Mullen wants to coach again. He wants TV to work.
Okay.
And if TV continues to work, I think he thinks he has enough money that it doesn't really matter, and he's going to be fine. But we've seen how quickly some of those thoughts can change for certain guys.
Quickly.
Jay is in Huntsville listening on the ump. Thank you, Jay. Welcome in.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Yeah, wake up this morning looking on Twitter, and, I mean, people are already calling for Harsin's job. But, I mean, it's not like the fact that they're calling for a job for his job. It's just the cowardly way they're calling for it. It's almost like your best friend dry snitching on you. Like, he's a good guy, but he was coming out of Shelly's house around 2 a.m., maybe he was dropping off coffee or sugar or whatever, It's like, come on, man. But, I mean, really, I think, okay, if he continues with this back and forth with the two quarterbacks, and clearly, I think he knows, if he can't clearly see even though Robbie's making mistakes or whatever, Robbie needs to be in there long enough to learn from his mistakes. And the offense is, we can clearly see the offense is more dynamic with him in there. And I think what's going on is Harson is kind of staying loyal to TJ because TJ stayed down with him or whatever. I don't know. I'm talking some Days of Our Lives stuff. You know, we grown men ain't supposed to be, you know, coming up with gossip and scenarios, but it's what we do. Let's be real. But I mean, if he continues with this two quarterback thing, yeah, it obviously he's having a hard time making decisions. Yeah, the play calling, yeah, maybe it needs to change, but it's the decision making. This decision should have been made a long time ago, who's going to be starting, and it clearly is Robbie.
Yep. Okay. Well, I don't know if it's clear. Here's the thing. I think if you decide to go Robbie Ashford full-time right now, no matter what, you're going to be limited. Okay? So ask yourself this question, and this is one that I don't think any of us really have an answer to. But I think I know which way I would lean. Which would be more difficult to defend if you're going into a game week? Robbie Ashford, full-time quarterback, or both quarterbacks going to play? Because I can tell you just by what I've seen, this is not even what I know. Robbie Ashford's full-time quarterback, yes, there are going to be some option plays, some read plays that are difficult to defend no matter what, no matter who. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, defensive they've found ways to defend a lot of that by either gap replace defenses or different guys flashing to the line of scrimmage or different fronts, whatever it is. And the playbook would be limited. It would be scaled back heavily. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you think that a scaled-back playbook with just his athleticism makes Auburn more difficult to defend, then maybe.
I had some discussions with a lot of my friends over the weekend, and one of the guys that was at the game was saying that there are some throws that Robbie makes, and then there's some throws that Robbie makes, and you know why he was maybe not QB1. And there's also some situations where he's just, I mean, he's an athlete, and it's like, man.
Well, I'll be totally fair and say that there are some throws that TJ makes that make you wonder if he should be QB1.
Yeah.
That's also fair.
And it's just like, I guess you'll live and die with the athleticism that Robbie has, but also, I mean, there's throws out there. It's just, you just cannot make. And I don't know. I feel like collectively it's bad. And going back to the trenches for a second, there's a play – I think it was one of the touchdowns Singleton had where there was a, I think it was either a tight end or a tackle just absolutely massacre in the corner on the, like, I mean, it was, when you talk about
88.
Yeah. And you talk about, you know, being up front, not being able to just win your one-on-one battle. And I mean, it got to a point where Penn State was just landing on thick there at the end. Like it started to get just ugly. And I don't know. I just feel as though if you're Auburn, what can you be confident about moving forward? Because I feel as though the mountain is only going to get higher and higher from this point forward.
Like I said, Damian, the most disappointing part for me was the front seven on defense. And that part was, and I go back to just, you run that little zone counter, zone cut, whatever you want to call it, and you run duo, and it's just over and over and over. And either a substitution or changing the front, I feel like something needed to happen. And that's to me, that's the most painful football to watch, is that when your team is being bludgeoned by the same thing and it just does not change. Because I go back to the Alabama discussion earlier. There are folks who think that Alabama's offense is stuck in the mud when they decide to just shift down. Still successful, still gaining yards, but it's just, it's not a rocket ship. You know, it's kind of turned into a tank.
Yeah.
And people don't like tanks. They like rocket ships. So like, I don't want the GMC AT4 package pickup Sierra. Like, I want the Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, both can be effective doing different things. That front was dominated. It's the only way I know how to say it. There weren't a lot of times that I saw a defensive lineman, an edge defender, a linebacker impose their will. And by a non-athletic quarterback getting his head knocked off, who, by the way, jumped right back up and went and converted the next down.
Yeah.
So, big play, big hit, fun, throwing that out there. Yeah. Loud, but the kid got back up and then, if I'm not mistaken, went and converted the quarterback sneak.
Still football.
Did they not drive down and score a touchdown on that drive?
Yeah, still football.
Like, I posted the video. It was awesome. I mean, I yelled at my TV in my hotel room when I saw it.
Yeah, and then.
But let's give the kid credit for getting back up and pushing his offense down the field and scoring a touchdown.
Kept it moving.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was the one where he ran the draw, quarterback draw in for a touchdown.
Yeah, and did his little, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You have to be very careful with what you alter offensively because of what you have. And if some of your strengths are the tight end position and intermediate throws and utilizing play action boots, things of that nature, then does it fit into what you would change your offense to? But I'll go back to what I said earlier. The strength of the offense is number four. And number four, getting handed the ball 9 times, to me, I can't, never going to be okay with that. Hell, I wasn't okay with him getting it 21 times last year in this game. I thought it needed to be closer to 41.
Yeah.
Like, go full Tommy Tuberville, Cadillac Williams into the ground mode if you have to. If that's what, because I think that's what would, to me, and I'm just, listen, I never played running back, so I don't know. But I played with some guys that got going as the game went on.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we had to use Heath Evans in 99 late. He was that guy. Rudy Johnson was that guy. He wore on you. Tank takes me as that guy. When a running back welcomes contact, I always believe that 15, 18 carries is like just the start of it. Then when they get to 32 and 34 and 38, nobody wants any part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably more excited to do it. How many times has he gotten that opportunity?
That's what I was going to ask. I was like, when have we, what's the most carries Tank has had in the game? Just in his Auburn career? Has it been over 25?
I will get that number for you.
Because I just think that we haven't seen just that game of number four, where it's like, you know what, we know that he's the best player that Auburn has, but we haven't seen him just take over a game, because I don't think he's ever gotten the opportunities to do it.
He's gone over 25 carries twice. He had 26 against Mississippi State in 2020, and he had 29 against Auburn last year for 63 yards. Some people thought, hoping it would have been 28. But nonetheless, we move forward. Matt Stinchcomb on the call for Louisiana Monroe at Alabama. We get his thoughts just on what he saw. And does he think that the Alabama offense is stuck in the mud until they go 2-minute? We'll ask him next right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Welcome back in, McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. 8:28 a.m. Monday, September 19th. Wild that we're already through week three in college football season. It was another just bananas weekend in college football. Remember how excited we were for Northwestern when they got that win against Nebraska and like they ran the ball 40 times in the second half and I could not be stopped. We were so excited.
Yeah.
Well, Northwestern's lost back-to-back games against Duke and Southern Illinois. Excitement out.
Right out the door.
We're going to have to change our tune on Northwestern a little bit moving forward. Seasons are changing. Football season's here. You know the weather is going to change as well. Protect your HVAC system with a checkup from a trained comfort specialist. It's going to give you peace of mind for the cooler weather to come. They're the official partner of Jocks, and you can find a comfort specialist near you at train.com. And like we say, it's hard to stop a train. Matt Stinchcomb of the SEC Network joins us now on the Bud Light Hotline. He was on call for Alabama, ULM over the weekend. Stinch, the vibe that we're getting from Alabama fans this morning is that they believe the offense is sort of stalled or stuck in the mud until they go 2-minute. I'm interested to get your thoughts on that, your theory on that, just kind of overall what you believe about this Alabama offense and when and how they operate best.
Yeah, I think their best play right now is Bryce Young under center. QB sneak. I actually think that's the best play in all of college offenses. And I'm half kidding.
No, you're not.
I love that clip from a couple weeks, although I couldn't agree with you more. I think this, man, that there's two things right now. I think Alabama's living kind of in two polarities where you've got a desire to run fewer dropbacks and protect the offensive front. In fact, when we were meeting with Coach Saban, he was kneecapping me a little bit, messing with me in the meeting that he would never go down there and watch us, you know, guys like me and you, Cole, doing O-line drills because it's just, he's like, my brain waves are flatlining or something. I can't remember how he put it. He's like, God, this is the most boring thing ever, and I never did it again. And he said, I want, you know, 15 to 20 opportunities a game where the offensive front really doesn't have to hold up. They don't have to block. They don't have to block, but they don't have to hold up. The success of the play were to be a pass doesn't hinge on winning 4 or 5 one-on-one battles up front. And that makes sense. I get that, given that oftentimes, and I think it's been exacerbated due to how rosters are managed and how recruiting unfolds, where these defensive linemen, they're better in pass rush than a lot of these offensive fronts collectively are in pass protection. They just can't live in that world down in and down out, not versus the better teams. So he's saying, I want an offense where that's not as much of an issue. Last year, when we had them for New Mexico State, Coach Saban was saying, it was too many dropbacks, too much of this, of these plays where 4 or 5 guys have to hold up in protection. We need to run more play action. We need to help these guys out more. And you see that. I see that. The first couple of games this year where it's like, yep, for sure, that's been a concerted effort. And what we've also seen is that this offense has operated most proficiently when they're playing what we would have called, you know, red ball, empty formation or empty backfield anyway, 5 wides or at least 5 eligibles outside of the core, outside of the tackle box. And Bill O'Brien said, you know, Bryce does a great job of seeing the field. The guy's just so smart. His football intelligence is so high. He sees what the defense is doing. And when you go 5 wides, the defense, there is no disguise. You know exactly what you're getting. The problem is you go 5 wides, and what do you get now? Well, now you get 4 or maybe even potentially how they want to run it, 5 one-on-ones. So it's an interesting, we talked about it in the meeting. It's like you've got these two different ends of the spectrum, one where you're running, you know, maybe 6 or 7 man protection off play action or RPOs, and the other where you just blow out the backfield and say, hey, Bryce, pick them apart. Let's see if we can hold up front. And they've been kind of, they're still figuring it out up front, Cole. I mean, you know, the Randolph kid, I think he started the game in number 85. He was a tight end, kind of like he was last year. And then he played some guard later at the end of the game. And they got 52 in there, so they're still figuring things out at guard. This offense is discovering itself. And games like Texas are the ones where you learn something. You know, you think you're something until you face some adversity, and then you start finding some things out. All right, it turns out maybe this isn't who we are. Maybe we're this other thing. I don't think that they're a spread offense where they're just going to live in it. But I do think that there's a chance that becomes, there might become a greater emphasis on that as the season continues to unfold.
Matt Stinscombe of the SEC Network joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. Can you take us a little further into the, you mentioned 52, Tyler Booker coming in, and then obviously Randolph still helping it tight end some back and forth. I mean, this was a game where you really saw, and I know it wasn't one that was going to be, you know, up for grabs, but you really saw the value of Cam Latu. I mean, he catches a couple of passes. You see the physicality at the point of attack. He's able to get in line, do those things. Can you just take us further into sort of where that is and why that is that Booker's coming on, and then maybe Randolph is not just playing guard anymore?
Yeah, other than they like Booker and they wanted to get him some more reps, and that was true on defense too. They had some guys with, like, you know what, we got to do a better job of getting some of these guys that aren't the first guys that run out there, that aren't an every down player. They need to get more snaps. They need to get more reps in a game. Not just for down the line contributions, but like real time, these guys are good enough to be helping us right now. So I think part of it's a function of they're trying to figure out guard. They're trying to figure out the guard position. I didn't get a sense, and it's justifiable, that they're like, oh my gosh, we need an answer here. It's which is the best answer? What gives us the best personnel, including if we want to go big, heavy horse, having, you know, Randolph push out to tight end in 85. So does that make sense? Yeah, maybe. You know, maybe it does. Maybe that's what you end up doing, and that's the best allocation of those resources up front that you can have. High on Booker, young player, and a guy that I think they want to be able to kind of vest into his playing time. But you saw that. That was definitely an intent. You know, along with Cohen, don't take anything away from him, a good football player. They didn't dismiss that as well. But it's just kind of a rotation where they're still trying to figure that out. And I think in so doing, you marry that with when have you operated best? Yes, it has been with more urgency. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs even mentioned to us, he said that I think we do better when we're going fast, when we're over the ball. And that does anecdotally seem to be the case when you're watching them. Why is that? Is it because they can't be more deliberate and in their offense or even in their formational alignment? I don't think so. Maybe it's just incidental. Maybe it's just to where they are as far as figuring out their personnel and getting all the right faces in all the right places. I do feel like it's no less true. And so until they get that figured, this is an offensive that's offense is still kind of in discovery mode. They like their tackles. They seemed pretty convinced that they're good at the tackle position. And based on what I saw, they held up pretty well. It's been a good body of work, I think, overall for both of those players. It has been far from perfect. But I think that they're solid at tackle, still trying to figure out those guard spots. And does it help to have a big body available at tight end at all times while having to report? And I think the answer is potentially, yeah.
Matt Stinchcomb joining us on the Bud Light Hotline, talking Alabama. He was on call for ULM at Bama over the weekend. So that being said, and the offense kind of trying to find itself again, where do you think they are from a running back perspective as far as what they like certain individuals for and how you believe that they will utilize them for those reasons moving forward?
Yeah, I think they like Jace McClellan a lot, but Jahmyr Gibbs is clearly the guy. And by that, you know, we're asking them, you know, what do you like? Ask Jahmyr, you know, what kind of runs do you like? Because you look at him and you think, that guy's a really good receiver. He's got great hands. You can split him out. He doesn't have to be out of the backfield. And so, you know, what position are you? He's like, I'm an athlete. Well, no, there's no denying that. But which are you more of? You know, it's kind of like James Cook a year ago for Georgia, where he finally figured out how to play running back. He was always a running back, but he's probably a better receiver. And they split him out a lot. And Jahmyr Gibbs, interesting, you know, his favorite run was the inside zone, tight zone. I thought, you don't usually see that. Usually the guys that want to play out in spacing can and are good route runners and are intentional in their route running. You know, they're not big on the traffic. You know, they don't like a lot of big bodies, a lot of stuff going on tackle to tackle. But that was what he liked. He liked that the best. And I will say that when you watch him, he does run it pretty well, runs between the tackles pretty well, gets behind his pads. All right. McClellan, same thing, different skill set. And what's different from what we saw a year ago where they ran zero two-back offense. I can't think of a single snap. You know, this year, they've been in two-back, I'm not going to say a lot, but a pretty significant amount. And you don't see two-back offense anymore. It just doesn't happen. A lot of times, you know, they'll put in like the inverted wishbone or something, but all that is window dressing to get out of it. There's some teams that do that, but no, not a lot of true two-back where you've got two halfbacks in the pistol or shotgun. They just don't see that, and yet you've seen that from Alabama. You know, A&M's run it some. A&M's one of the few teams that do it that does it still. I think we'll see more of that this year, mainly because, you know, you can be in two-back, one-tight-end offense or just two-back offense and really be in one-back offense as long as, number one, Jahmyr Gibbs is one of your two backs because you just blow him out of the backfield and the guy's a receiver. So I think that they like their skill set, and you can see them already toying with that personnel early on in the season. And it looked to me, especially in the Texas game, they enjoyed – a lot's been made about, you know, the two-minute offense and blowing out the backfield. But interestingly, the other successful plays – and there were others outside of these, of course, but it seemed like when they got that two-back offense, they also kind of got going a little bit. So it's either an empty backfield – or a for at least today's times, an exceptionally full backfield that Alabama has operated pretty well in.
Matt Stinscombe joining us on the Bud Light Hotline, talking Alabama ULM from over the weekend. He was on the call for that one. Do you leave that game with any concerns moving forward? I mean, a lot of folks watched the Texas game, said, oh, offensive line not good enough, you know, corners obviously in trouble, but do you watch the Texas film, then come work the ULM game, and now moving forward, do you say, man, I'm still really concerned about this part of Alabama's football team moving ahead?
Yeah, the receiver position is a position group in the passing game that will continue to make strides, needs to make strides. They talked about the chemistry that exists and you know, who do they have chemistry with? And you watch these games, and, you know, Jermaine Burton has had negligible impact, if any at all, on the season so far. They took a shot to him versus ULM. It was an overthrown pass by Bryce off of play action. Trayshawn Holden seems to be kind of his go-to guy, the guy he's most comfortable with, especially when things break down. But there's cause for concern. Bryce hung a ball up. Scrambling versus ULM was just a bad decision. You don't see those out of him. And when you've got some unknowns at receiver, there's not many of those foul balls that you can afford and versus good teams anyway. Does that put more pressure on the guy? It does. But I think he can handle it. And in fact, everyone in that building over there is assured of the fact that he can absolutely handle it. But they just can't afford those type of plays. Not right now, not with the passing game the way it is, where I wouldn't say that it's inept or anything, but it's far less formidable than you otherwise would have thought it could have been. And Coach Saban made an interesting point that they had some guys leave the program that had experience. They weren't their best players, but they were good players. And they were guys that would be out there taking reps. So they have improved from a net talent standpoint, but they've lost experience and maturity at some positions, and receiver would be one of those positions. That is an area of concern. I'll be honest, Cole, I watched the offensive front in both those games, and I thought they fit up pretty good. You know, a lot of people are putting, like, the pressures on the offensive front. They don't realize that, you know, backs and quarterbacks play a role in protection as well. I don't know that it's as concerning up front as it's been made out to be. If I had to put a pin on anything, I would say it's probably the receiving core and the passing game, especially from a downfield standpoint at this stage of the season.
Matt, great stuff, man. Appreciate the time. Great job on the call, and I look forward to catch up with you again soon.
All right, brother. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Matt Stinscombe of ESPN. The SEC Network joined us on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there. Follow Matt on Twitter, at mstench79. All right, when we come back, continue getting feedback from you. 800-239-9569. 800-239-WJOX. What should Auburn do offensively moving forward? And we'll get to the rest of the SEC games that took place over the weekend next, right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Spent a lot of time on the Auburn loss against Penn State over the weekend, 41-12, Auburn goes down. Just ugly, not good. And a lot needs to be cleaned up, a lot needs to be repaired. It doesn't feel like a lot of people are at a point where they want to see if things can get repaired. Still 2-1 on the season. And you look at a Missouri team coming to town, game that you feel like should be winnable. LSU had a really nice win against Mississippi State, so now that game has probably changed the way that a lot of people view it, but it doesn't feel like a lot of people want to get to that point. A lot of people don't really want to wait and see. Conrad, where are you on your patience with Brian Harsin, what you feel like should happen, and do you feel like there should be a period in time in which people say, all right, give them a chance to adjust, see what they can do, morph things, and can they potentially find a way to sort of right the ship?
I feel bad for the guy. I think kind of what Paul was saying earlier, where the performance on Saturday doesn't negate everything that went down earlier this year in February and the coup and kind of trying to force his hand and get him out of Auburn. So I feel bad for him for that. But at this point, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you're going to see the rest of the year that would give you the confidence that this thing's headed in the right direction. I mean, unless Zach Calzada were to magically come in and look amazing and play like he did against Alabama for the next 9 games, I don't really see that happening. I feel like there's just too many question marks. There's too many problems. And with all the hype that I felt going into the Penn State game, and, you know, a lot of that was with the are they or are they not going to wear the orange jerseys, but you could kind of feel the hype and the buildup, and it seemed like they knew how important this game was, and to go out and lay a dud the way that they did, I think it's, I don't know, he's kind of like a dead man walking to me.
That sort of amplifies it. Did you wear your Tua t-shirt because he threw 6 touchdowns yesterday? Is that?
Hell yeah, I did.
Okay.
It's Tua time, baby.
Well, no, I didn't know people chose their wardrobe based on success of individuals or teams. That's most people just wear sometimes. Them all the time. But you look and see who had
you
a good day.
You wear a Garrett Cole shirt after he gives up 4 runs over 5 innings the other day. At least my
teams who I support them either way. I don't wait until they do well. My son Judge does have a Judge jersey, and maybe I should have him wear that today.
You should after the
58-59 yesterday.
You
so,
should.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go to that. So I was interested in you picking your outfits based on who does well, and that's how many teams you have to look at to decide if did so and so have a good day. I'm gonna wear their gear today. How often does that happen?
I had to get this one overnighted to me after I saw his performance yesterday.
I did have a dad yesterday at our T-ball game say, "Oh man, Auburn shirt today. That's brave." Like, what am I going to not wear an Auburn shirt? I mean,
oh yeah, I mean, I'll wear my, hey, it's an Alabama Tua jersey. I'll wear it.
My son's T-ball team is the orange team this year. Almost feel like we've gone back to Joy League, but
there you go.
I don't have a ton of Auburn or orange shirts that aren't Auburn shirts, so I'm trying to support the team while still supporting the
other
team.
That's what you should do.
It's a double support if you look at it the way that I do. All right, John is in Florence, wants to chime in on Auburn over the weekend. You're on the Bud Light Hotline. John, welcome into the show.
Oh, what's up, Cube? How you doing, man?
Doing well, man. Thanks for the call.
First of all, man, I think what Brian Harsin needs to do, man, he needs to identify some talent, like some playmakers. He needs to start sticking them on the field, regardless of freshman, sophomore, junior, whatever, whoever is out there. If it ain't working, then they need to move out. And that includes quarterback. Like, I think when they game the other day, to me, looked like a practice Auburn was going through. I don't know what it looked like to anybody else, but it looked pretty bad to me.
No, and we had a caller that called in earlier, John, and he kind of went on a long little introduction to what he wanted to ask. And he said, you know, the main thing I thought we were going to get and the one reason that I was excited about with Coach Harsin, the thing I was really looking forward to, and I was thinking there in my head going, me too. And I thought he was going to go physicality. And I thought he was going to go, you know, we will win the line of scrimmage both on offense and defense because, you know, he brings that edge to the table. And that's something that I never thought that his football teams would be in void of. And I felt like they were on Saturday. That, to me, the most disappointing part. And I agree with you on playmakers, don't get me wrong. But like, I always thought that his team would go out and attempt to be the aggressor on the offense and defensive line and rarely get pushed around or at not least have a counter when you were punched in the face. And that was the part that probably bothered me the most about Saturday, specifically on the defensive side. Because as you know, my expectations with the offensive line have not been great, but goodness, I thought that was going to be different with what we saw on the other side of the ball Saturday afternoon.
I agree. I mean, we could barely take a snap, you know, my man, I think it was number 11, whichever them guys, I mean, they were just living in the backfield. And to your point, I mean, I think Tank only got, well, Tank had, what, 9 carries on the day? He didn't have a bad game. Tank didn't. But, I mean, the guys, cornerback is finna get Brian Harsin fired. I'm somebody that supported him. I've called and defended him, you know, wanted to give him a chance. But I just think what stung the last guy that we had with a lot of people, the people that I talk to and all other Auburn fans, if there's something that's not working, like, buddy, you got to have a plan B. You know what I'm saying? Like, so if Finley's not working, go to Ashford. Ashford ain't working. Maybe you need to get Garrett some snaps because somebody got to step up and make a play, regardless if it's the quarterback, the receiver's not separated. Because to me, receiver-quarterback relationship is hand-in-hand. Like, your receiver's going to be as good as the quarterback and vice versa. You got to give somebody a chance. We threw the one to Landon King, and he got the 50-50 ball. We need more of that. We got to push the ball downfield.
Appreciate the call. Up against the break. Sorry to cut you off. Jay, hang tight. We can get to you. On the other side, as soon as we come back, continue taking your calls, your tweets, getting into the show as well, reaction from this weekend's games right after this on Mac and Cube.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.